Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Photo News Monthly is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, especially patrons of our parent program, Daily Tech News Show. Get the ad-free version of the show and more at patreon.com/DTNS. Coming up on Photo News Monthly, Adobe announces photographer-centric updates. Is there life left for APS-C cameras? And a new film stock hits the market. This is the photography news for the month of June 2022. In lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Rich Straffolino.
And from north of the wall, I'm Anthony Lemos.
All right, lots of news to cover, so let's start with a few photography things you should know.
The photo app VSCO announced that it's relaunching to focus on its core creator audience and return to its roots. The relaunch focuses on a streamlined editing workflow and connecting creatives together with a shared gallery system called Spaces, coming to all users in July.
What will the VSCO girls do? Then NASA, the European Space Agency, or ESA, and the Canadian Space Agency, CSA creatively, will jointly release the first full-color images from the James Webb Space Telescope on July 12th in a live broadcast scheduled for 10:40 a.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the stream on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. On July 13th, experts from the agencies will answer questions on these images on a live stream.
Moment launched a Kickstarter campaign for the 1.33x anamorphic lens adapter, which can be used to adapt standard spherical lenses to shoot anamorphic footage. It works on primes 50mm to 150mm and zooms 55mm to 150mm, so node wide-angle support. It attaches to the front of the lens with a 67mm filter thread, so focus shift might be an issue. Early bird pricing starts at $999, and Moment says it ships in December.
Well, in other cinema news, Blackmagic updated the Pocket Cinema Camera 6K with a G2 version. It borrows some features from the 6K Pro model, like having a larger battery, swiveling touchscreen, and support for an OLED viewfinder, but it lacks other niceties that the Pro has, like built-in ND filters. It's otherwise keeping the same sensor as the original Camera 6K. The 6K G2 is available for $1,995. That's $500 less than the original 6K when it debuted, and you get a full version of DaVinci Resolve Studio.
The L-Mount Alliance is getting a little more crowded, with DJI announcing it joined Leica, Panasonic, and Sigma in the group. This comes as earlier this month, Panasonic and Leica announced a comprehensive strategy collaboration agreement to develop L-Square technology, which theoretically covers full-frame and non-L-Mount Micro Four Thirds offerings. And in other Leica news, it discontinued its TL and CL line of APS-C mirrorless cameras.
Right, and in APS-C news, just as Leica is killing off its line, we're actually seeing some signs kind of across a lot of different manufacturers that APS-C, you know, the talk had been, oh, you know, full frame's taken over, bodies are getting lighter, cheaper, sensor readouts are getting faster, but it seems like APS-C is getting a little life. Isn't that right, Amos, that's your name? There
yeah,
you go.
So many names. Canon recently announced its first APS-C mirrorless camera that uses its newer RF mount, the 24-megapixel R10 and the 32-megapixel R7. The R7 includes in-body image stabilization, IBIS, can shoot stills at up to 30 frames per second, and the R10 can shoot up to 23 frames per second, but without the IBIS. Both shoot cropped 4K 60 frames per second video or oversampled 4K using the entire sensor at lower frame rates. both arriving late 2022, with the R10 coming in at $979 and the R7 at $1,499.
Yeah, so Canon making that first stab new mount. It's like, what, 3-4 years old now? But that's not it. You know, Fujifilm has kind of been the stalwart of the APS-C camp, and they announced their latest camera with that sensor size, the XH2S. They named it so silly because there's no XH2 yet, but whatever. But the big thing here is that it's its first stack sensor, APS-C sensor, that we've seen. We've seen some full frame. We've seen some Micro Four Thirds stack sensors. This is the first APS-C sensor. It offers up to 40 frame per second shooting, reduced shutter lag, open gate 6K recording, which I know a lot of people are excited about, IBIS, and pretty much all the bells and whistles you expect from kind of a flagship hybrid camera at this point. And that's going to be hitting the shelves later this year.
So from the stalwart to the classics, Sony has been a bit of a sleeping giant in the APS-C world, barely releasing any new cameras after essentially creating the APS-C mirrorless market back in the day. In fact, its full-frame A7C is essentially an APS-C body with the guts of the full-frame A7 III. But it released three new crop sensor lenses, the 10-20mm f4 power zoom, the 15mm f1.4G, and an 11mm f1.8. These would pair well with its vlogging-focused ZV-E10. Like, why can't they just make the names easy? Come on. There's easier ways.
I have a whole rant about Canon's numbering system. We can get into it after we finish up all of these announcements. Even not to be left out, although officially they're left out, but rumor-wise not being left out in the APS-C love, Nikon, little old plucky Nikon, possibly still sticking with the APS-C game. Nikon rumor sources are saying a Z30 body is on its way. They've only ever had the Z50 and the ZFS, the retro-styled kind of looks like a film camera in there. And they've pretty much left the mount languish in terms of new lens design specifically for that body. So that could be coming later this year. Nikon rumors pretty reliable when it comes, you know, they have pretty good sources, all of those Fuji rumors, Alpha rumors, and stuff like that. They're all pretty well sourced. So we wouldn't be surprised to see that this year. Amos, what is your big, which one of these stands out the most to you as like, hey, this is the sign, APS-C, it's still kicking, it's still going to be around for a while?
Well, I really like the fact that Canon has actually brought one to market, APS-C cameras to market using the RF mount, the new RF mount. And I think that shows signs of marketability and market growth, and it fills that a really particular hole. But the one that excites me the most is Sony, because anytime you can get Sony into a space, they really have a chance to take over that space and really expand it to the best that that space can be. And they've done things with mirrorless cameras. I mean, they're the ones that brought mirrorless to market, really. At least to the mass market. And that is what has me excited, because when Sony takes something and they run with it, it really pushes the rest of the market along with it. And if they're going to do that with APS-C, that's good. That's awesome for the whole market in general.
Yeah. If they want to put some of their sensor wizardry, which they will sell to other camera manufacturers very happily, and really put instead of like, even like the ZV-E10 is basically an A6400 or like one of their A6000 bodies, right? With just a little bit more vlogging centric, like has a little flippy screen, and a couple other niceties for that. But it really isn't a really substantial rewrite for them, like the same kind of effort they put into their A7 line, where they're, you know, they don't come out with them super often, but when they do, it's a huge flip and deal. The fact that they're releasing new lenses for that means they're not planning on, and like these seem to be like really like that 15 1.4, that's going to be a 23 millimeter ultra, you know, with that crop body,
right?
That's nice for landscape. I mean, that's nice for architecture, nice for landscape, it's nice for vlogging. Now, not stabilized, but not that big of a deal. I agree, the Sony stuff to me gets me excited that Sony hasn't forgotten that APS-C is a thing, whether they'll come out with new bodies. The Canon stuff, you're right. Like that's obviously a big deal because Canon is a huge company. But first of all, camera makers, make the big number better. I can't stand camera makers that make the little number the best one. Be like a graphics card, make it better. Canon, it's a big deal that they're into that, but they're only making really full frame lenses for it. That always is baffling to me. I don't want like a 75 millimeter nifty 50. That's weird. Get it out of here. Do better, Canon.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. However, this whole thing has me excited because the APS-C market fills a very specific niche in that
it's true.
If the people with a camera on their phone are going to use that and they want to take it to the next level, the APS-C market is that perfect low price point market for them to get into before they step on to either full frame cameras or even up to professional level full frame cameras. And that market, I don't want to see that market go away. I don't want to see that upward mobility of people in their photography careers being stunted because we now have mirrorless cameras. The APS-C is really an important part.
And that's why I'm surprised to see Nikon supposedly come out with another one, because their Z5, it's like $1,200. I mean, like it's on sale, you can get it for under $1,000. That's full frame. Not the greatest specs in the world, but they've done a pretty good job of building out their budget kind of prime lens lineup so that you don't, you know, it's feasible. It's the price of like a maxed out iPhone, but it's still like not a, you know, Sony A1 level kind of investment that you have to put forward through. The fact that they're still kicking around with APS-C. All right, let's see what you got, Nikon.
Yeah, either way, I'm just excited to see the market grow. The film company Orwo.
Yeah. A Tale of Wheel or Orwo.
Okay. The film company Orwo has been around the film industry for over a century.
They've been in the film industry for 100 years.
And in recent decades, focused on the black and white film production. But the company opened up pre-orders this month for the Wolfen NC500, its first new color emulsion in decades.
Yeah, and if you're saying, is that a big deal? I think I see color films coming out. Well, color film, super hard to produce. Like, you could probably make, like, a very basic black and white emulsion in your bathroom and probably, like, make yourself very sick with toxic fumes. But, like, you could do it at your home if you really wanted to. You can't do that with color. Over the last decade, we've seen lots of film brands come to market. But generally, like, companies like Lomography, they're usually buying film from other companies, aka Cough Cough Kodak, and rebranding it. And they're putting their marketing power behind it and making it look real shiny and nice. And that's all great. But this is completely different. This is a brand new color film. Really big deal.
Yeah, the Wolfen NC500 is a 500 ISO film and can be processed in standard C41 chemistry. That means it can be sent to any photo lab for processing, doesn't need to have a ramjet layer found on Kodak's Vision 3 cinema film. Orwo says Wolfen uses a unique chemical formula based on an old Agfa stock. It does warn that this is currently set to be limited run production, with rolls shipping in July.
Yeah, and to see what is interesting, so I'm a big film enthusiast, for those of you that may not be aware, and this summer has kind of weirdly been a golden age for new film releases. Right. This isn't even the first new color film we've seen. Adox, which is another small 100-year-old film company, put out another limited edition color film called Color Mission. This gets me excited, though, because if Orwo is doing this, I'm imagining they may also be doing this for cinema film, which is where Kodak basically makes all of their money in film, is selling to movie studios thousands upon thousands of feet of film per year, whatever, like they make these long-term agreements, gives them a ton of financing. So if Orwo can turn this around and then do that, that gives them a much better financial backing to like keep making consumer level stuff where I don't think they're making a ton of money. And what this really comes down to is a lot of people that are in the film community complain that prices have gone up recently, and they have. There's no denying that film is way more expensive now than it was 5 years ago. But I think it's also created a market opportunity for companies like Orwo, like Adox, like a lot of these other, like Cinestill, for example, to say, okay, we can't sell something that's twice as expensive as what Kodak offers, but now we can create something that's price competitive, at least with the higher end Kodak stuff, and it's new, and we can maybe make this a sustainable business going forward. That's a huge deal for like this as a long-term viability thing.
Yeah, and that's important. Now, I have a question, and that is, back in the day, you used to be able to get film pretty much anywhere. You just pick it up.
You go to Walgreens. I mean, technically, you might find a roll or two.
Yeah. But it used to be ambiguous anywhere, everywhere. What makes it so difficult? And why is it so hard to make film now?
So a lot of it is, it comes down to scale, right? So a lot, like Kodak is entire like way of making film was designed to run 24/7, like never shut down the machines, just constantly produce film. Right. And so a lot of the film companies are having problems where they can't scale down so that like when Kodak wants to turn on their machines to coat new film, they have to waste literally miles of film before like they actually like the machines spin up properly.
Really?
Some smaller companies like Adox is doing a good job. They're one that's kind of reformulated themselves from the ground up of being small scale production. But like that's why you don't like film sells out. Like right now, like Kodak color film is impossible to find online because they just make it in batches because that's what makes sense. And then they shut down the machines for 3 months or something like that. So that's one of the reasons that like film has just gotten more expensive. The other thing is in terms of regulation, environmentally, like Fujifilm has had to stop making films, they're saying, because of environmental reasons in Japan, that regulations just, you can't like use these chemicals anymore in a lot of ways. So a lot of companies are having to either find ways around that, or they're paying some sort of environmental credit to do that, which makes things more expensive. So there's a lot of supply chain reasons why it's hard to scale down. Like the economies of scale just kind of don't work at super small production. So that's been a long-term problem the industry's been dealing with.
Got it. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to run down every single day of the tech headlines, you need to check out our sister show, Daily Tech Headlines, all the essential tech news in about 5 minutes, dailytechheadlines.com. And you can hear this voice. By the way, you're welcome.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right. If you've used Adobe Creative Cloud, it can feel like a subscription you just can't get off. Photoshop and Lightroom are just two of the most ubiquitous apps among photographers. And while there are viable and excellent alternatives out there to both, things like Darkroom or Capture One, something like that, they're available either as subscriptions or standalone products. There's no denying that Photoshop is just the industry standard. If you're working in photography, at some point you're going to be asked to do something in Photoshop. That requires Photoshop.
And that's why it's a big deal that Adobe is testing a free web-based version of Photoshop in Canada with intentions to open up to everyone. Mm-hmm. Adobe says the service is intended to be freemium with core features available for free to try out, but more sophisticated features available behind a paywall. No word on when a wider rollout will come.
Yeah, Adobe launched the web version of Photoshop in October for subscribers. It wasn't free to anybody or freemium or whatever they want to call it. It does offer basic edit tools and layers, but Adobe pitched it more for collaboration with teams to make small tweaks and annotations. Still valuable, but not kind of a standalone product.
So is this an Adobe Elements killer? A way to combat piracy and password sharing? Or is this anything more than Adobe giving everyone their first taste for free?
Yeah, that is the question of, is this, because I think Adobe has done a pretty good job on the mobile front of being like, listen, there's a billion base, like, you know, face swap apps or background swap apps. I mean, it's built into a lot of that functionality is built into like the core apps. Now, I think they've done a reasonably good job of building out their Photoshop Express experience for free and as a paid offering on there, where it's like, it's fairly fully functional, but like, if you want to get in with curves and you want to, or, you know, like that kind of editing, even Lightroom to a certain extent, I think scales really well on kind of this freemium model. I wish it would be an elements killer, because I do think there is like a, hey, I just need to do something with like two layers, three layers. I don't want to spend $10 a month every single month, have this 10 gig install on my, you know, base level MacBook Pro. Like, there's no reason that couldn't be in a browser. And I feel like if they do that, there's enough people that are going to see, yeah, I need more layers, or I need content aware fill, or I need the myriad of features that Photoshop offers that they'll eventually pay. My concern would be that this will still be a, hey, you can use it. We're going to offer like two features. We're going to offer the magic wand tool and I don't know.
Text box.
Yeah. And then everything after that, you're gonna have to pay. That's my fear. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not beyond what I think Adobe could do with this either. I will say that I think this can really fill in that market. Just like this, I was saying about the APS-C earlier, this can fill in that market between people that are just dabbling and the people that are doing it full time and the people that are really proficient at it, as that learning curve. And if they can give you most of the product without, you know, charging you for it, and then keep the premium features behind a paywall, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm kind of concerned on how they're going to do the freemium aspect of it. Like, are they going to charge monthly or charge by feature? That'll be interesting to see. But either way, I think this fills that same, that middle market of people that want to get better but don't know, may not be able to pay for it.
Well, I would even say Elements falls within that, where it's like, it feels like that should be like Photoshop easy mode. And it's kind of not. It doesn't teach you how to use, like I would like this to teach me how to gracefully get into more advanced Photoshop features, where I would get the, you know, I would pay to get that utility, as opposed to like kind of like a broken half product, right?
Right, right. Now, full disclosure, it's been many, many years since I've used Photoshop Elements.
That's true. It's been a while for me too.
Yeah. But from what I remember, that was crap. Oh my goodness. Different UI. It did some of the things that Photoshop would do, but it didn't have the advanced filters, and it just felt kludgy and it sucked.
Hey, back off, man. All right. Well, we will get out of here on this at the 40th Lights Photographica auction at Lights Park in Germany. Amos, I know you go there every year. Leica Zero Series prototype camera recently sold for 14.4 million euros, breaking the previous record for these Ur Leicas, which was expected to sell around $3 million, or 3 million euros around there. These prototypes were created by Leica founder Oscar Barnack in 1923, and 23 are believed to have been made, even less of that surviving to this day. This one was particularly special because it had Barnack's name engraved on the top of the viewfinder. But for that money, the winner also got some other niceties, like an attached 50mm f3.5 lens, original leather lens cap, and an engraved aluminum cap. You don't want to let dust get into that or like a body. That'll just ruin it when you're out shooting in the desert.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm always wondering when I see things like this, you know, these old cameras, these really old cameras that are going for auction and all this, you know, selling for all this money and everything else. And I'm always like, okay, it's an old camera, but what makes it special? What makes this one special? And, you know, of the 23 that were made and less than that that remain, you know, this one's got some features on it that actually do make it special. And I think that's really cool. I'm still not in the market for a $15 million camera.
Well, and to show you how big of a deal this is, there is a plaque in the I think it's Lights Germany, right? That, where Oscar Barnack took the first photo with one of these Ur Leicas, and there's like a giant statue and like a marker for where it's at. Like, this is a big deal. For that, like, obviously for like photography, whatever, like as a legacy, historians, you know, as a prestige brand, but like, it's a big deal for people around there too. So, you know, hey, if you got 14.4 million euros, I'm happy that you got what you wanted.
That's insane. We would love to hear from you. Let us know what photo news stories we missed, or tell us what you think of the new format. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com with the subject line Photo News Monthly. That way we know we get it. And remember, you can catch Daily Tech News Show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC, and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll see you next month.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.